Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. Well, Biden's partisan prosecution, day one of the Trump trial in New York City. We're going to have Jonathan Turley on this story. Anti-Semitism shutting down our elite universities. Molly Hemingway and Charlie Hurt will weigh in on that. Plus, did you know it's Earth Day? And nobody cares. We're going to talk about it with Breitbart's John Carney. Biden's Green New Deal Climate Bank ATM. Oh, yes, of course. That's with North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan about the end of Anwar as we know it. But first up, Fox Business, Lydia Hugh has the latest from the Trump trial today. Lydia, what can you tell us?
Very busy here in Lower Manhattan today, Larry, as the criminal trial got started underway today with opening arguments in that case brought by District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Prosecutors accused Trump of engaging in a criminal conspiracy with his former attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, and David Pecker, the former CEO of American Media, which published the National Enquirer. Prosecutors say they engaged in cover-up to suppress damaging stories about Trump prior to the 2016 election, but Trump and his lawyers say Trump is innocent. Watch this.
This is a Biden witch hunt to keep me off the campaign trail. So far, it's not working because my poll numbers are higher than they've ever been because the public understands that it's a witch hunt.
Another familiar name you may recognize is Matthew Colangelo. He's a former senior Biden Justice Department official who at one time investigated Trump for the Attorney General's office and is now, Larry, prosecuting Alvin Bragg's case against Trump. In fact, Colangelo delivered the opening arguments for the prosecutors today. Now, as the criminal trial got underway, Trump lawyers in this civil fraud matter appeared in the courthouse just behind me, the Supreme Court. They appeared before Judge Arthur Engoron to defend Trump's $175 million bond that he posted in the civil case. For weeks, Attorney General Letitia James has been attacking that bond over questions about the insurance company, asking the court to invalidate it. But in what seemed like maybe a change in strategy, the Attorney General's office came to court today apparently willing to talk with the Trump lawyers on those bond issues. Both sides came up to an agreement as follows, that the bond of $175 million will be stored in cash, not in mutual funds or securities where the value can otherwise fluctuate. And the insurance company, Knight Insurance, can't trade or move the money and will maintain exclusive control of the account. And also that Trump and Knight Insurance will provide monthly financial statements to the Attorney General's office and the court showing that the account balance remains at $175 million. So, Larry, this means that Trump's assets will remain protected from Attorney General Letitia James as he pursues an appeal of that near $500 million fine that's been entered against him by Judge Engoron. Meanwhile, David Pecker, the CEO of American Media that I mentioned earlier, he took the stand today in the criminal case. That case continues tomorrow with Pecker resuming the stand and continuing his testimony tomorrow morning. Larry, back to you.
You know, Lydia, on that, Knight's insurance, does anyone understand money is fungible? I mean, it's like a big company. So you have money over here in one pocket and then money in the second bucket. They don't know who's trading what. So I'm amused by that. But anyway, great reporting. We appreciate it very much. Now, look, just a couple thoughts from me. You got three big news stories at the beginning of the week, and Joe Biden's on the wrong side of each one. Not on the wrong side by a little. But he's on the wrong side by a lot. First, Prosecutors' opening statements in the Trump New York jury trial were made by, get this, the Biden Justice Department's former number three guy. His name is Matthew Colangelo. This is a big job, number three. All right. He's prosecuting, I guess, because Alvin Bragg can't. Just shows you how involved the Biden White House and Justice Department are in this crazy prosecution of Donald Trump. And ironically, it was the Justice Department initially passed on the prosecution, as did the Federal Election Commission. But Biden is involved big time. Also, I ask, what is illegal about non-disclosure agreements? They're used all the time. And what is illegal about candidate Trump running for president and, yes, wait for it, trying to influence the election? He'd like to win. It's called campaigning. But there's something very wrong with President Biden trying to keep Trump off the campaign trail and thus interfering with the election. In other words, campaigning, okay. Interfering, not okay. Plus, Mr. Trump's gag order prohibits him from talking about Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. But they are constantly trashing him. There's something wrong about that. Cohen's a serial liar. Daniels owes Trump about $500,000. So net-net strike one for Joe Biden. Then comes the anti-Semitic campus riots at Columbia, Yale, and elsewhere. Joe Biden has expressed sympathy for the Jewish students who are under attack. All right. But sympathy is not the same as a Justice Department or FBI investigation and prosecution of anti-Semitic hate crimes and hate speech. These elite colleges are guilty of both. University laws are being violated. Classes have been canceled. But remember, Joe Biden has become the principal defender of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And DEI has been the principal trigger behind the whole anti-Semitic movement. Until these university trustees are forced to change, they're not going to change. Joe Biden could force change, but he won't. Why? Well, there are many reasons, but one of them is Dearborn, Michigan. So the wave of anti-Semitism on college campuses is strike two for Joe Biden. The third news item this week is, you got it, Earth Day. Where's Joe Biden wants to spend another $7 billion on a climate change solar slush fund? All right. This is just the latest installment of the Biden Green New Deal Climate Bank ATM. Strike three for Joe Biden. Why? Because most folks don't care about Earth Day or climate change. A Gallup survey released today shows that 55% worry about inflation, 53% crime and violence, 48% illegal immigration, only 37% are concerned with the environment. And a couple of weeks ago, a Wall Street Journal headline read, Biden is spending $1 trillion to fight climate change. Voters don't care. Voters surveyed in seven swing states showed immigration the most important at 25%, economy 22%, inflation 13%, abortion 10%, and climate change, wait for it, 2%. So in other words, Americans are far more worried about Bidenflation and illegal immigrants than climate change. Know what? Three strikes and you're out, Joe. All right. Enough for me. Joining me now, Charlie Hurt, Washington Times opinion editor, Molly Hemingway, editor-in-chief at The Federalist and Fox News contributor. They are both Fox News contributors. Sorry, Charlie, didn't mean to say that. Molly, this Matthew Colangelo, I don't know if people know him. He's not a household word. He was number three in the Justice Department. Lydia reported on that. I'm picking up on it. What's he doing with the lead? He's the lead prosecutor for the, not Alvin Bragg, but this guy Colangelo, who came up from Washington to argue this case for Bragg. What does this mean?
Well, people already know that the Biden Department of Justice is going after President Trump with their federal cases. But they don't maybe realize how involved Biden, DOJ officials, and other top Democrats are in all of the other lawfare that's being run against the number one Republican, whether that's here in New York or down in Atlanta. And so Matthew Colangelo is a great example of this. Was Merrick Garland's number three at the Department of Justice. That is a really good gig. It's something that people really want. It is, frankly, weird that he is up here in New York prosecuting this case and that someone of his caliber would be behind this. People don't trust Alvin Bragg, Fannie Willis, Letitia James in some of these cases, but they get these well-financed, really good, they have really good experience to go after Joe Biden's top political opponent.
So, yeah, but Charlie, we have other fish to fry, but I want to hang on this Molly's points. This guy was a big shot in the Justice Department, the Biden Justice Department. Now, the Biden Justice Department passed on this case in the first place.
Right.
Federal Election Commission passed. Actually, the local district attorney, the former Manhattan DA, Cy Vance, friend of mine, for what that's worth, he passed on it, too. Bragg passed on it until finally he was pressured to do it. But can I connect the dots from Biden's White House slash counsel slash Justice Department to this lawsuit in New York City? Is that, does that make any sense?
I think without a doubt you can draw a connection to it. And it's, you know, the fact that everybody passed on this case is proof that in law, as far as the law is concerned, there's no case here. The only, you know, Democrat, you know, they love to talk about how Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. He's not a threat to democracy. He's a threat to Democrats. And that's the problem. He's the greatest threat to Democrats that they have. And that's why they're pulling out all the stops. And it's, I think it's particularly interesting when you look at whether it's going after his bond money or, you know, going all of the cases in general. It's all designed to hurt him. The reason that she does not want him to have access to that money is because she doesn't want him to be able to actually make money on it. And so she's trying to not just put him in jail.
Good point. That's great.
Also wants to hurt him financially.
Yep.
And also, by the way, wants to humiliate him. And what we, and of course, what else is going on at the same time? What else is going on at the same time is Democrats in Congress are passing a law in order to take away anybody who's convicted of a felony to take away their Secret Service because they want to throw him in jail and not let him have Secret Service in jail. That's how sick these people are. And by the way, whatever you think of Donald Trump, if you let Democrats win this way, this is how they will run every election for the rest of our lives. And even if you don't like Donald Trump, you ought to vote for him just to punish Democrats for doing this.
By the way, I just want to... there's a difference between Donald Trump trying to influence the election. That's called campaigning, last I heard. And Joe Biden doing the sins, both the omitted and committed sins that Charlie just referred to. That is interference. I'm just trying to say, to me, I'm going to ask Jonathan Turley about this later in the show, right? Constitutional scholar, a good one. But I'm just saying there's a difference between campaigning for the office and interfering with the other guy's ability to campaign for the office.
It also reminds me of this other situation from 2016. So the claim here is that by doing a perfectly legal non-disclosure agreement, he interfered in the election. Well, let's think about what Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party did in 2016. They used a law firm to create the Russia collusion hoax. Mm. They funneled the money through a law firm. Mm. They created a fake dossier, and basically nobody's been held accountable for it. And because nobody's been held accountable for it, you do see things like this. The current president using lawfare to interfere in an election in a way that would be worth so much money and so much time. I mean, this keeping your opponent off the campaign trail, right, keeping him from being able to raise money and campaign, that is not how we do things in this country. We do not handle political differences with lawfare, and yet that's what we're doing right now.
And can I add one other little thing? You know, another thing, in addition to everything Molly just said, is the fact, you know, you hear people talk about the Hatch Act because we don't want to let politicians use government resources to go after political opponents. This entire operation is being run and funded by taxpayers.
Right.
They're forcing taxpayers to foot the bill in all of these cases, and they're all because Donald Trump is a threat to Democrats.
Yeah, no, I get it. I want to move on. Shutting down college campuses, DEI, which Joe Biden has taken to new heights, started with Obama, probably went started before that too, but he's been the biggest backer of DEI. To me, DEI breeds anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is what's happened to these college campuses. Maya, I'll let you take a whack at this. This is a cultural issue. It's cultural Marxism. It's woke culturalism. It's anti-Semitism. It's shutting down campuses. I mean, they've had to stop the classes. That's bad enough. And I don't see Joe Biden's Justice Department doing what they ought to be doing, which is minimally an FBI investigation and maybe more. I don't see them lifting one finger so far. Tell me I'm wrong, but I don't see it.
Well, we haven't seen anything yet. Yesterday, we saw that the White House had an official statement saying that it was bad what was happening with these Jewish students. But this afternoon, President Biden came out and said there are good people on both sides of October 7th. He said that he's with the Jews, but Jewish students, but he's also with the people who support the October 7th attack. This is what, you know, we were told Donald Trump did, which wasn't actually true.
In Charlottesville.
The media were hysterical about it.
Right.
But you were absolutely right. This is the natural result of DEI. When you teach people to say that your political opponents are racist, are bigoted, when you teach them that violence against these people is okay, it is not surprising that we are where we are now.
Charlie, you know, we've had Professor Dershowitz on time and time again, and he's made this case. DEI leads to anti-Semitism, but DEI is the real problem. And I want to add to that, the Bidens have the authorities, Molly suggested, even though they're now, both sides are to blame, or both sides are good. I don't understand any of that gibberish, except it's about Dearborn, Michigan, I think. That's what that old gibberish is about. But the reality is, the trustees of Yale and Penn and Columbia and so forth, the trustees have the authority. They can make changes, and they don't make changes. And one reason they don't make changes is the Biden Justice Department is not going to prosecute them for them. And I think that is a big mistake.
And it certainly seems like they never pay a price. There are never consequences for these universities or these trustees that you mentioned.
They're the boards of directors.
Yeah.
They run the place. I mean, I want to say that.
And they're responsible. And they're reading the headlines we're reading. They're seeing all the stories we're seeing. The idea that they do not take an active hand in this and do something about it. And maybe this will be different now. Maybe they will get punished. Maybe they'll be shamed out of the public square for condoning this stuff. But Molly's exactly right. You know, DEI, it teaches hatred is what it does. It's a perfect extension of Democrats' identity politics. It's how they operate. You divide everybody by race, creed, religion, gender, whatever, and then pit them all against each other and get them all to hate each other, and then Democrats win elections. And that's what DEI does, and so we shouldn't be surprised. This is the end result of DEI, as well as identity politics, as well as just about everything the Democrats do.
Hate crime is forcing shutdowns of universities. It's not just speech, free speech. You could make some free speech argument. I wouldn't make it myself, but I can see legally. But this is a crime. This is an action. Columbia had shut down their classes. I, from what I gather, Yale did the same thing. Berkeley, I don't know, maybe they have, maybe they haven't. This has to be prosecuted by the Justice Department. Where's the FBI coming in now and locking them down, taking witnesses, getting affidavits, et cetera, et cetera? That's what I don't get.
But Columbia is also asking for help from the outside when they have so much power themselves. Mm. If they expelled students for destroying everyone else's educational experience, that would help. This is an institution that loved the BLM riots. Mm. It loved shutting everything down. And now they're asking for help from others. They have more power themselves than they're willing to use.
I say it's 0 for 3.
Yes.
I'm saving the best for last. That's Earth Day. I'm going to let John Carney and Governor of North Dakota tear that apart. But anyway, Charlie Hurt, Molly Hemingway, thank you.
Great to see you, sir.
Appreciate it. Coming up, as I was saying, it is Earth Day. I don't want you to forget that, folks. I've got three words. Drill, baby, drill. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, next up on Kudlow.
Staffer on the Hill. So you know Washington, you know these buildings, but what is the difference of walking in with your badge, chief of staff, now you're the senator?
To have been here as an intern, and then now to come back and my name be on the door, the gravity of that is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. You know, to have had the opportunity to have learned and to have been here, to have met people, to have built relationships, to have seen things work and then many times not, and now to have a shot to be a part of that, a part of making our nation better and stronger, it's truly an honor of a lifetime.
You're replacing somebody who was here for decades. You worked for him. He was very well established. What's that experience like?
You know, I think we're seeing it across the nation that people are ready for new blood. And so coming in here, but realizing the reality that there aren't too many of us that are from my generation that are here, and the responsibility that that carries, because there are parents and hardworking Americans that are our age all across the nation that want a voice.
In the midst of this, you have school-aged children.
Yes.
How do you manage home and family? And do you think that's a fair question for female lawmakers?
Right.
Should we be asking that of everybody who's got school-age kids?
I do think that we do tend to ask that more of female lawmakers than we do men. But, you know, one of the things that we look at is I think about the sacrifice of so many people across our nation. And so this is a sacrifice, obviously, for our family to be away, but it pales in comparison to that of our servicemen and women who are gone overseas many times for months on end. You know, some of them never actually having the opportunity to return home. You think about people who are pulling 12-hour shifts or people who are working two jobs to make ends meet for their children and be able to provide. And so what it puts in perspective is that everybody across this country has a story, and everybody is giving it their all to make things work. And one of the things we've committed to is FaceTiming. We actually had dinner via FaceTime this week. My daughter and I are doing a daily devotion together, so doing that during FaceTime, being able to talk about that, talk about her day, you know, look at the scripture we're reading, and be able to, you know, be that hands-on parent, even though some of it is having to be done virtually.
What would you say to other people from your generation who look at something like this and think, I couldn't be a senator, or this is overwhelming, or how would I tackle this? What would you say to them about whatever their issues are or causes they want to champion about getting involved in this process?
Yes, well, I would say we need you. So whether it's school boards or the United States Senate, you see people from my generation saying, it's time. It's time for us to do our part. It's time for us to contribute. It's time for us to be a part of the solution. And so I would say, number one, we need you. And number two, be unafraid to fail. When I got in this race, people said there was no way that we could make this happen. And if you looked at the numbers, you know, you would think they couldn't be wrong on that. But hard work, passion, energy makes a difference. And, you know, God's plan is greater than anything that we have in front of us.
Hello, this is Fox Extra. To our friends watching in Canada, thank you for choosing Fox. You can catch both Fox Business and Fox News on Rogers. Keep it right here.
Wherever you are, whenever you want it, Fox News Digital is the world according to Fox. The top headlines other sites won't touch. Unmatched coverage you won't get anywhere else. And the stories that keep America clicking. No one does it like FoxNews.com. Plus, download the Fox News app to get breaking news, alerts, and all your favorite shows on the go. And if you can't watch, listen.
The Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Fox News Digital, the world according to Fox.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to forget, today is Earth Day. Our own Jeff Flock is standing by with more about the Earth. Jeff, how is the Earth?
Happy Earth Day, Larry. Yeah, there you go. It's a beautiful day for solar out here. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. And that's the big news today. You know, the president went to Virginia to announce this Solar for All plan. As you reported at the outset of the broadcast, $7 billion with a B dollars to go to people who couldn't otherwise afford solar power. They're going to set it up for them. President says this is going to be about 900,000 people. He says it's not a small deal. Here's how he put it.
It's a big deal. This new Solar for All program means that 900,000 households, 900,000, will have solar on the rooftops for the first time and soon. Millions of families will save over $400 a year in utility bills, and that's $350 million nationwide.
not hard to save if somebody else is paying for the solar. The other big thing that the president did, of course, pertains to the National Petroleum Reserve, which is to shut down more of that to drilling exploration. You know, the National Petroleum Reserve, we got a picture there, maybe shows you where it is, northwest Alaska. You might remember President Harding setting that aside back in the 1920s for oil. But the president now shutting part of it down. Although it's worth noting, Larry, that he did last year approve that Willow project. That's a ConocoPhillips drilling project in the National Petroleum Reserve. 180,000 barrels a day going to come out of there. That really ticked off the environmental crowd. All kinds of protests. They said he sold them out. Well, now sort of paying them back with 10 million additional acres now being protected, two big chunks of the National Petroleum Reserve. You know, he says, hey, climate is important, despite your numbers there. People do care about the climate, and those doggone Republicans just don't get it.
Despite the overwhelming devastation in red and blue states, there's still those who deny climate is in crisis. My MAGA Republican friends don't seem to think it's in crisis. They actually want to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, which provides the funding for a vast majority of these projects.
Well, Larry, I would say this. You know, he kind of ticked off the environmental crowd by approving Willow. Now he's sort of ticked off those in the producing crowd that weren't already ticked off. I don't know about you, but I've been through a number of divorces in my life, and I find that when both sides feel they're getting screwed, it's actually fair. But that's just me.
Yeah, I'm afraid those numbers don't balance out by a long shot. But, Jeff Flock, thanks for your report. For more on this, let's bring in North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Governor, welcome to the set, first of all. Thank you very much.
Great to be with you, Larry.
So I don't think the Willow yes, ANWR no is even remotely balanced. I mean, it's not even close.
No, these two things are just completely ridiculous, because the idea that somehow the Biden policies are saving the environment, the number one thing that's lowered CO2 emissions worldwide has been the advent of U.S. clean natural gas.
Right.
If he really cared about the environment, he wouldn't be putting a ban on LNG exports. He'd be helping to build more LNG plants. And this solar thing that we talked about here at the top of the hour, less than 4% of the electricity in the United States comes from solar today, and it's intermittent. It's 4% when the sun is shining.
Right.
And 78% of those solar panels built in China. Less than 2% build in the United States. So this is a win. It's a win for China when he does throw $7 billion at solar panels. And then it's also a pre-election political payoff, because these are going to people that he hopes is going to vote for him. And if he really cared about poor people in this country and their electrical bills, under his administration, electricity's gone up 30% mm-hmm. in the time that he's been in office. If he wanted to help everybody with have a like a $1 trillion tax break, then you'd be developing more U.S. energy, and it would help the environment, because we do it cleaner, better, smarter, safer than anyone else in the world.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a lot of this is just slush fund stuff. This is the government doling out money with no particular rhyme or reason, except under the general rhetoric of climate change. But the fact of the matter is that there's no immediate existential risk. That has never been proven, except in political circles and some media circles. And I think to some extent, it's the immediacy that's a hoax. I'm not denying that there are climate issues for the next 50 or 100 years. I am denying, however, that all this spending ahead of private investment, market-oriented investment, technological advances is just wrong. And that's why I say drill, baby, drill is the right policy. That's not an unlimited policy, but it would bring down oil prices and bring down inflation, and would also protect. We have Dan Senator Sullivan's coming on to talk about ANWR later in the show, so I'm going to push that aside for a minute. But the Green New Deal Climate Bank ATM is what we call it. We have a great picture of it to put up on the screen. That's what this is. This is vote buying. This is a Green New Deal climate buying ATM machine.
Yeah, $27 billion worth across, $7 billion today on top of the $20 billion before. But it absolutely, it's a pre-election payoff. And I say, if you really cared about the environment, and when you're talking about expanding U.S. energy production, you would want to have all of that development happen here. Because when Biden does things like, whether it's, you know, shutting down Alaska, whether it's coming after Texas and North Dakota, It doesn't reduce demand. It just shifts the supply overseas. You know who's up 50% in oil production? Iran. You know who's up? Russia. You know who's up? Venezuela. So when he's doing that, he's actually helping our adversaries, and they're the ones that are funding the terrorism. So part of it, Biden's energy policy combined with his weakness on national security leads to the fact that we've got to increase funding for Ukraine and Taiwan and Israel, because these wars have literally started because of his energy policy.
So the Bidens like to say this: we're producing more oil than ever before. Which is not exactly true. I mean, it got to 13.1 million barrels a day. It's now back to, I think, 12.8 or 12.9. But the point is that I want to make to you, and you're an oil-producing state, obviously. Pre-pandemic, we were at 13.1 million barrels a day. So at that level, we have moved in 4 or 5 years. We should be at 14, 15 million barrels a day,
yes,
maybe more, if we had the same trajectory. And I think the reason for that is so much is the war against fossil fuels that the Bidens have conducted. We should be way higher than 13 million barrels a day.
Well, absolutely. We should be higher than that. And the fact that we're flat and will be declining while the rest of the world is up is just an indication that his policies are helping our adversaries and hurting the United States. And the crisis that is coming is going to be around electricity, because with the electricity, prices are up 30% under Joe Biden. But he's driving baseload down, creating artificial demand by subsidizing EV cars.
Right.
And the price is going to continue to go up and the reliability is going to go down. If Joe Biden's reelected, we're going to have brownouts and blackouts all over this country by 2025, 2026.
All right. Governor Doug Burgum, great state of North Dakota. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. Coming up, folks, it is Earth Day once again. I mean, it's so important we're devoting another segment to it. But the vast majority of Americans are far more worried about inflation and almost every other issue than they are about climate change. So we're going to talk about it with Breitbart's John Carney. Please stick around. I'm Kudlow. Much more to come.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business. Invested in you.
In Garden City, Kansas, air ambulance pilot Rodney Baker is one of a dwindling number in his field. Highly specialized providers who bridge the life-saving gap between rural America and emergency health care.
We have a golden hour, and that's a standard in EMS, is that that patient needs to be at a level one trauma center or a trauma physician within that hour to increase their survivability.
Flying ICU bases are located all over the country, but last year, Air Methods Corp., the nation's largest provider, shut down several, citing inflation, under-reimbursement by Medicare, and federal regulations. And the pilot shortage isn't helping.
But these are certainly hard times for our industry and our ability to serve the communities that we serve across the country.
According to the American College of Surgeons, one in four Americans live more than an hour's drive away from a potentially life-saving trauma center.
If I didn't have that possibility, I probably wouldn't be here today.
In 2019, Sean Ellidge's skull was crushed while working inside a wind turbine in rural Kansas. He needed brain surgery, which was a devastating 2.5-hour drive away in Wichita.
Where I was airlifted, it only took about between 50 minutes to an hour to get to Wichita to have that surgery.
One study by Boeing found in the next 15 years, the world will face a shortage of 61,000 helicopter pilots. Becoming one is expensive. Training and education costs up to $170,000. Entry-level pay is around 60 grand.
Frankly, from a financial aspect, the airlines were out-competing us on salaries.
And even with lucrative signing bonuses in the tens of thousands of dollars, air ambulance companies still need to convince young pilots to live in small towns.
Money's not always the answer. Being where you want to be, doing the right thing, taking care of your patients and your crew is more important.
Helicopters just like this one are now flying to middle and high school campuses in an effort to get kids interested in a career in vertical flight. In Watkins, Colorado, Alicia Acuna, Fox News.
This is Dawson Springs, Kentucky, or what's left of it. You can see the debris field here. Aluminum from roofs. You have wood boards with nails from homes all over. People's belongings, pillows, clothes, picture albums, someone's fence here.
This is the same exact spot that you just saw me walking through just 2 days after the tornado hit. My goodness, look at it now. Mostly cleared out, certainly not piles of people's belongings. The trees behind, many of them torn down as well. And you take a look at this neighborhood. There are slabs where there used to be homes. Now there is a rebuilding process here in Dawson Springs.
Ever throw anything away? You don't have to answer. It's a rhetorical question. Of course you have. We all do. Because garbage is the great leveler of our society. Rich or poor, young or old, eco-friendly or not, if you exist, you make it. And together, we make a lot. Every week, Americans create more than 5 million tons of trash. Enough to fill a baseball stadium from top to bottom 14 times. But it shouldn't come to that. Thanks to the 200,000 men and women whose job it is to keep all that trash under control. It's a constant uphill battle that leaves little time for anything else, like, say, making a television show.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right, joining us now, Breitbart's John Carney, co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest, a must-read each day. John, Earth Day or not, it doesn't seem like most Americans. It's barely a top 10 issue. In fact, some polls, it's not even a top 10 issue.
No, Americans don't care about the climate change because, look, it's something that they're being told will happen 50, 100 years
that's
from
it.
Now by
that's,
any realistic
that's right. That's
measure.
Right.
But inflation is the issue they're facing right now. The border crisis is the issue they're facing right now. Tonight at Breitbart Business Digest, I am going to call for a National Inflation Day. Mm. Look, Earth Day, that's in the past, started in 1970. Everybody knows about that. They even celebrated in schools. We did an Inflation Day. Inflation is something we can affect with policy. The American people need to stand up, turn out. I say we have it in June. That's when we had inflation peak under Biden. And we could all get together and say,
every
June, no more inflation, National Inflation Day. Let's bring it on.
This is the Wall Street Journal poll. So the swing states, immigration, 25%, economy, 22%, inflation, 13%. You could put inflation and economy together, actually.
That's 25, right? It's the top issue if
That's
you put
right.
them together.
Then you got abortion, 10, climate change, wait for it, wait, climate change,
2%.
2%.
Right.
And you cited in your Breitbart today the Gallup poll, environment 37%, but you got inflation, crime, violence, immigration, everything else is above 50.
Right.
So it's down at 37. So I just don't understand this.
Well, it's a big problem for the Democrats because the issues that Biden wants to campaign on, we saw him today, he wants to campaign on the Green New Deal, but Americans are rejecting that. They say, look, we need to do something about inflation, and his proposals are all inflationary. If you crack down on fossil fuels, it drives prices up. If you pour money into demand for these Chinese solar panels, that's going to drive inflation up. Everything he's doing is inflationary, and that's the number one issue that Americans want him to not do. Don't drive prices up further.
John, let me just switch gears if you could hold your breath for one moment outside of Earth Day. Important story running on Breitbart. IMF official, this is Kristalina Georgieva. I know her quite well. She's the executive director. Joe Biden's open border is hurting Americans' wages. Very interesting. Now, this is the IMF. I mean, they have a million economists there.
Right.
Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But it's a very establishment operation. And they're saying what a lot of people are saying, that The open borders have damaged real wages, taken jobs away from native-born Americans, et cetera, et cetera. You have a thought on that?
Yeah, I love this, that for decades we were told, no, immigrants are not competing with natives for wages. But now that we have an inflation problem, they're saying immigrants will solve the inflation problem, and that's wrong. I don't believe inflation is caused by workers being paid too much. Mm. I don't believe it's because Americans are living too well. I think it's because the government is living too well. I stole that quote from Ronald Reagan. That's who said it first, and it's still true today. It's not because wages are too high. It's not because workers are getting paid too much. It's because Joe Biden is running deficits at World War II level deficits, at financial crisis level deficits, when we're not in a crisis. We have very little unemployment today. We shouldn't be running those kind of deficits. So when they say yes, they finally are admitting that all of these immigrants are hurting native wages. Mm. Yes, of course they are.
$2 trillion deficit again this year. It was $1 trillion for the first half of the fiscal year. They're on track for $2 trillion. You get GDP out Thursday. The Hotlanta Fed says 2.9%.
Yeah, we remember just a few months ago, everybody was saying the economy was going to slow. The Fed was going to need to cut. We now know the Fed's not going to cut, as we've been saying
in our lifetime.
never in our lifetime. The economy is growing, and it's going to continue to grow. There's no, as long as unemployment remains very low, people are going to keep spending. That's going to continue to grow the economy. There's no reason for the Federal Reserve to cut rates, so they're not going to. And frankly, I'm glad that the market has finally come around to that point of view. I was very worried when everybody was irrationally exuberant about Fed cuts coming. That's not happening. The economy is growing. That's good for us. The problem is we need to solve the inflation problem and we need to get control of our borders. And that's exactly what all these polls are telling us. And they should be telling the Biden administration, but they want to talk about Earth Day instead.
Alas. John Carney of Breitbart. We may see you later in the week, depending on those numbers. Thanks very much. All right, switching gears, let's go back to Biden's partisan prosecution on day one in the Trump trial. Joining us now is the great Jonathan Turley, George Washington University Law School constitutional scholar. John, thank you for giving us some help on this. You know, we talked earlier in the show, and I just want to get your take on this. This fellow, Matthew Colangelo, who was number three in the Justice Department, he surfaces now as, I guess, the lead prosecutor in this Alvin Bragg case. He had a big, big job in the Biden Justice Department, the Merrick Garland Justice Department. He's left it to run this prosecution, which you yourself have criticized it for almost from day one. What do you make of that? What should we all learn from that? Why is this senior Biden guy coming down here to make arguments for Bragg that Bragg should make for himself?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating optics issue that you would think they'd want to avoid. You know, you've got a case where the predecessor of Bragg said, I'm not going to prosecute this theory because I don't believe in it. Most of us don't. Bragg himself didn't want to do it. Then he was pressured into doing it. And then he goes and he gets someone from the Biden Justice Department to be his lead prosecutor. The optics are not good, but they also don't seem to matter in New York. I mean, Bragg is betting everything on having a New York jury, a New York audience, and this just doesn't bother them. This idea that, you know, this is a case that none of us have ever seen the likes of, a theory that few of us can understand, but they can't get beyond the fact that the defendant is Donald Trump, and that's all you need in New York for many voters.
It just suggests, Jonathan, either rightly or wrongly, that there is a Biden involvement in this trial. And as you know, Mr. Trump is furious because they're holding him in tow in this courtroom instead of out there on the campaign trail where he belongs. I mean, for the rest of the country, does it look like Joe Biden is involved in this trial in ways and means that he shouldn't be?
Well, that's the fascinating aspect of how the politics and law are merging here. You know, this is sort of a split screen election, right? Earlier, we would have the split screen of Trump in one court after being just in another, being, you know, taken from courthouse to courthouse. Now we have one split screen showing the president campaigning while the president, while the former president is effectively caged up in New York. And I don't think the American people like it. Outside New York, this is obviously not playing well. The majority, you've got about 35% who believe there's a crime here. That's not a particularly high number given the stage of this prosecution. Usually by this point, people assume the worst. And I think that's playing out around the country. People view this, and I believe it is, the weaponization of the criminal justice system. John, we can debate about
No. I don't want to interrupt you. Please. I was just going to ask you, look, on this question, the non-disclosure agreement that is at the heart of this to some extent, people calling it hush money, but actually it's a non-disclosure agreement. I think it's used pretty frequently. What's illegal about that?
It's not illegal. What's wacky about this is even after opening arguments, many of us are still debating what the crime was that Trump was trying to conceal. You know, even liberal legal analysts and other networks have panned this case because this is all premised on this idea that there was a federal election violation. The Department of Justice rejected that. They didn't see that here. Most people that are in this area believe there is not a crime involved on the federal side. So this is all a Potemkin village being put up by Bragg. And I think the opening argument by the Trump team really delivered some heavy blows. You know, where they said, look, someone else designated this as a legal expense. But keep in mind, Larry, this is what the Hillary Clinton people did. You know, after denying that they funded the Steele dossier, it turned out that they did fund it and they counted it as a legal expense. But then they litigated that issue to avoid a fine. And kept on saying, look, we still view this as a legal expense. So you have many of the people that supported them in that who are having vapors and saying, well, of course, Trump should go to jail because this non-crime was designated as a legal expense.
Yeah, key point. Jonathan Turley, thank you. As always, we appreciate it very, very much. See you soon.
Thank you, Larry.
All right, folks, last one coming up, Joe Biden is helping Iran while hurting Alaska and the rest of the United States. We're going to talk about it with Senator Dan Sullivan. Ending ANWR. Dumb, dumber, and dumbest. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories.
We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
The Evening Edit on Fox Business, invested in you.
This may seem like a bad day for these bighorn sheep, but they're going to a new home that is not only safe from predators, but a place where they'll be able to help prop up the bighorn population in Utah.
So we've got between 1,000 and 2,000 acre ranch with a high fence around the whole thing. And so we're going to turn them loose there, see how they do. Hopefully we can get up to around 150 sheep in there total before we start moving them.
Derek Huell is a wildlife biologist with the Utah Division of Wildlife. He's among the dozens of people taking part in the operation. This year, 30 bighorn sheep, 4 rams, 26 ewes and lambs are being processed for relocation. The operation begins with a capture using a helicopter and a net gun.
They'll find, locate sheep, they'll net gun them, and their mugger jumps out and he hobbles them, secures them in the bag.
The chopper then brings them back for processing, where staff and volunteers examine the animals, take blood and other samples, and look at their overall health.
Utah will take those animals, a clean source herd, put them in a unhunted population, and use those animals as sources for translocations within Utah.
The bighorn sheep at the Valley of Fire are the choice sheep because they appear to be free of a respiratory issue that plagues some of the other populations in southern Nevada, a disease that is easily spread from contact with infected sheep. The operation is a win-win for both Utah and Nevada, according to Wood.
Benefits us to sort of reduce that population in a natural way, and it benefits Utah for them to have a good, clean source herd of healthy animals.
The captured bighorn sheep will be driven to Utah and will be released at the enclosed Sky Rider Wilderness Ranch once they get a clean bill of health, which takes about 24 hours. This is the first time this operation is taking place, but it's not the last. Utah wants more bighorn sheep, and Nevada is planning to accommodate.
I think our goal is to do this at least two more years so we can get, 30 next year and 30 the following year is our goal.
Les Griffin, Fox 5 News, local Las Vegas.
Step foot out onto Badwater Basin.
We're coming in and we thought, it's a mirage.
And you might feel like you're venturing out of this world.
We got this feeling to be in another planet,
Sparkling salt flats, jagged mountains, and a mirror-like lake reflecting the colors of an ever-changing sky.
I know that's a very rare thing, so I figured it's a good time to get some pictures here.
A very good time to get pictures because this lake isn't going to last.
Let's say early December, good chance the lake will be here. After that, I don't know. It's anyone's guess.
It was formed back on August 20th when the remnants of Hurricane Hillary dropped around 2.2 inches of rain on Death Valley National Park in a 24-hour period.
Our average rainfall in an entire year is less than 2.2 inches of rain.
That sparked flash flooding, did significant damage to the park's roads, and prompted a prolonged park closure. But it also created a lake at the lowest point in North America, 282 feet below sea level.
Back in geologic history, during the Ice Ages, there was a lake here that was 700 feet deep that was called Lake Manly. And so some people will say this is Lake Manly reincarnated.
Though this latest reincarnation isn't quite as deep, about 9 inches at the center, and it's getting shallower by the day.
Soon after Hurricane Hillary, it was more like a foot and a half.
So for now, visitors flock to see the fleeting waters of Death Valley's only lake.
It's different.
It's rare.
It's pretty incredible.
Words to describe a watery scene in one of the driest places on Earth. Even if you come here to Death Valley National Park after the lake evaporates, Badwater Basin is still worth a visit. That's because salt collects here, and as the water evaporates, unique cracks and crevices form in the salt flat, giving it the appearance of a giant jigsaw puzzle. At Death Valley National Park, Max Gordon, Fox Weather.
So Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska writes in the Wall Street Journal, Biden helps Iran and hits Alaska. And he joins us now, Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan. Senator, it's a great op-ed piece you wrote, very important piece. I mean, this helps the axis of evil. This hurts the U.S. in almost every way, shape, or form. And then you added on to one that I wasn't aware of, the issue of, I guess, rare earths, the Ambler Mining District. That's out of play, too. Anyway, Senator, tell in your priorities, which is the worst?
Larry, they're all horrible, right? And they're lawless. The president has no authority to do any of this. Of course, it hurts my constituents, but this hurts America. You know, natural resources is one of our great strengths, particularly against these dictatorships. And we have plenty of oil in Alaska. We have incredible critical minerals. And right now, the president is more focused on sanctioning Alaska and Alaskans than he is on sanctioning the Ayatollah terrorists in Iran. It's unbelievable. And of course, on the critical minerals, this is really important. Hardly a day goes by without a story about how dependent we are on China. This is one of the biggest critical mineral deposits in America, maybe the world, the Ambler Mining District in Alaska. And they said, we're going to shut it down. So none of this makes sense. It only helps the dictators and pleases Biden's far left. Everybody else in America and our allies, we're undermined.
I thought that, President Trump or Congress had opened up ANWR. What gives Biden the authority to close it down, Senator Sullivan?
He has no authority, Larry. And you and I worked together with President Trump. That legislation was in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The second right. section of that was all about Anwar. And it mandated two lease sales in Anwar. And we got one done during the Trump administration. Biden comes in and said, we're going to cancel it. But here's what happened on Friday. This wasn't Anwar. This is a place called the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, set aside over 100 years ago by Congress for oil and gas development. And they took 13 million acres off the table. Larry, this is one of the most prolific oil and gas basins in the country. And one other thing, as you know, we have the highest environmental standards in the world in Alaska for oil and gas development, for mining. All this does is outsource production to dirtier countries who happen to be adversaries of ours. And heck, with Iran, they're using their oil revenues for terrorism.
Yeah.
This is a lose-lose-lose on every front. The only people who are happy about it, far-left radicals, what we call the eco-colonialists in Alaska, and, of course, the dictators who are our adversaries.
Last 30 seconds, Senator. Don't the Native Alaskans and Native American Alaskans, don't they want it? Wouldn't they like the job?
100%, Larry. I'm really glad you raised that point. In this area that rule on the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, what we call NPRA, all of the leadership of the Alaska Native community, our indigenous leaders, came out against this rule. They were 100% against the Biden rule. Guess what Biden did on Friday? He said, I'm doing this to help them because they want it. I've never seen a more cynical lie coming out of the White House and the president. It was despicable.
Dan Sullivan. Senator Dan Sullivan, great stuff. Thank you for the battle. Keep on fighting. We'll talk soon. Folks, be right back with My Last Word.
A national health alert is in effect for ground beef. Officials say some ground beef made by Greater Omaha may contain E. coli. The Department of Food Safety and Inspection Service says the warning impacts products made on March 28th with a use-by date of April 22nd. Clothing company Express has filed for bankruptcy protection in the U.S. and will close more than 100 stores. It also owns the brands Bonobos and Up West Express. The company operates about 530 Express retail and Express factory outlet stores. Chipotle Mexican Grill is opening its first location in Kuwait City. It's the first time Chipotle has entered a new country in more than 10 years. The location is at The Avenues, Kuwait's largest shopping mall. Chipotle plans to open a location in Dubai later this year. And the Caitlin Clark shoe deal sweepstakes reportedly coming to an end with Nike signing the Indiana Fever rookie. According to the Wall Street Journal, Clark picked Nike over Adidas, Under Armour, and Puma. She's expected to sign an 8-year, $28 million deal with an average salary of over $3 million. The deal also reportedly includes a signature shoe for Clark. That's business. In New York, I'm CJ Papa.
Ben Weiss, when he first started, had card tables out on the street giving people free tastes of his drink. He started at the very bottom. Billion-dollar idea is now the latest addition to the FBN Prime lineup, and billionaire businessman Ben Weiss is searching for the next big billion-dollar idea. Here he is joining us in studio. Welcome to the Fox Business team.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here, but I love this story idea. And tell me, is it like a game show? How does it work? Is it like, you know, you get ideas and you see which ones smell good and taste good?
Well, I wouldn't call it a game show. It's basically the search for the next big billion-dollar idea and the entrepreneur behind the idea. Because as you know, and you and I go back, I mean, it's as much about the entrepreneur as it is about the idea. But what's great about the show is that it takes me to 15 cities to see 15 entrepreneurs. I literally knock on their door. They meet me for the first time when I knock on the door. I get to meet their idea. I get to meet them. They take me into their basement. I get to meet their families because, make no mistake, the families go on these journeys with you, and you need that support. You need to dream alongside your loved ones. And I determine of the 15, I choose 6 to come back to my basement, which is this underground speakeasy in Trenton, New Jersey. And it sits underneath my new entrepreneurial company called Crook & Marker. And in the basement in New Jersey, they get to compete with challenges that are based on my book, Basementality, that really measures their mentality, their ability to usher an idea to market when, quite frankly, nobody cares.
When nobody cares and everybody's saying no or this isn't going
constant
to work.
Rejection.
Constant rejection. And you sat in your basement for years whipping up buy and making it happen. What is that special something that you look for in both the entrepreneur and the idea? I mean, have you met a great entrepreneur who has a stinker of an idea?
Yeah, I'm one of them. I've had them. I've failed as much as I've succeeded. And I'd rather have the great entrepreneur than the great idea. Because ideas come and go.
If you're watching us in Israel on HOT, thanks for tuning in. Have a question or a comment? Email us at foxaroundtheworld@foxnews.com.
Wherever you are, whenever you want it, Fox News Digital is the world according to Fox. The top headlines other sites won't touch. Unmatched coverage you won't get anywhere else. And the stories that keep America clicking. No one does it like foxnews.com. Plus, download the Fox News app to get breaking news, alerts, and all your favorite shows on the go. And if you can't watch, listen.
The Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Fox News Digital, the world according to Fox.
So we got a phony trial in New York, we got Earth Day that folks really don't much care about, and we got DEI and anti-Semitism at large. Three strikes and you're out, Mr. President. On the other hand, Liz McDonald.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.